into the project that we got together in Marylebone and had some lunch and talked about this in its formative stages. So it's nice to see you again in the beautiful British countryside and talk about it now that it's done.
Well, no, I think it's wonderful. It's wonderful. Yeah, we're actually we're sitting in deepest Oxfordshire, and it's actually quite a nice day. So that's all very pleasant. Yeah, as Matt says, Matt kindly asked me to take a look at some of the chapters of the grid as it was emerging. So I've been involved with it, through that time, which has been very exciting, and it's just wonderful to see the thing out. Tell us a little bit about it, Matt. I mean, how do you move from customer experience to the grid? What was behind that?
Oh, wow. Well, what was the genesis of the project? Really, I think up until the first book, the customer experience book, came out, up until that point, I was really a practitioner involved in the design of customer experiences and especially digital products and services, anything with a screen, I guess, websites, apps, that kind of thing. But when that first book came out, it had the unexpected consequence for me personally of kind of promoting me out of harm's way, right? So nobody would pay me to design anything anymore. They're like, well, you're a writer, you're a speaker, you know, we just want to talk about strategy and how we do these things. And so I kind of found myself more in that aspect of things. And one thing that was particularly kind of emerging as a theme for me is that people were contacting me about how do we improve the customer experience? We have this customer experience problem. And in probably the majority of cases, actually, the problem lay elsewhere in the business. It wasn't actually the customer experience that was the challenge. It was maybe that the proposition wasn't quite right, or that the brand wasn't as appealing as rivals. And even when people were making quite impassioned cases for improving the customer experience, it wasn't always clear how that would track back to any kind of commercial return. Was it going to reduce costs? Was it going to, maybe the cost to serve or something, was it going to generate more revenue by improving retention or sales volumes or those kinds of things? And what I realized was that when it comes to making a strategic decision, there are just so many different moving parts that you've got to kind of keep track of. And of course, a business is a system, so everything is interconnected. So there's that cause and effect of every decision that you make that's going to play out across the whole of the rest of the business. So I kind of smelt opportunity there, thinking what we really need is a kind of a model that allows us to see the business from above, mm-hmm. where when we're making a decision or when we're evaluating the strengths and weaknesses of a business, that we can see all of those things on one page and we can really identify where the opportunities or challenges are. And then when we do make a decision, we can say, well, if we change this here, it's going to affect these things, and aim for the good of the whole. I think the overriding challenge, if you like, or the overriding message to try and get across with the book is that for years, decades, really, management thinking has been dominated by these reductionist approaches, mm-hmm. Taking things apart and monitoring or measuring or kind of optimizing them in isolation. And of course, in the same way that you can have 11 superstars and a kind of not an especially good football team, not that I know anything about football, but you know, you've got to make sure that when everything comes back together, it aims for the good of the whole. And if you look at so many of the kind of scandals or things that have happened, pretty high profile ones over the last year, I won't mention any particular names, they all have the same root, which is fixation or obsession with one aspect of what makes for a great business, whether it's price increases or increasing volumes or cutting costs at the expense of the others. So really the idea of the book was to give people a way of seeing the business as an interconnected whole. And that's really where it came from. Okay.
I think that actually is a very profound point, actually, that you make there. Because particularly in things like strategy and work of that kind, we've become familiar with in-depth probes, in-depth analysis into very fine slices of the business, if you like. So, but the, oddly, the effect of that is to make a business look like a complicated mechanism rather than a complex mechanism. And I think what
that's a good word.
You know, what you do is bring back in a very approachable, very simple, very elegant way the complexity. This is complex. That if you move something over here changes. And
yeah, right. And I mean the incident that triggered me actually to write the thing was quite a personal one. I had surgery on both my knees at the same time as I write about in the introduction to the book, this arthroscopic surgery. And it was pretty clear 6 months later that it hadn't fixed the problem, right? So I went to all these different people. I went to osteopaths. I like squashed myself with one of those foam rollers and nothing made a difference. And it was only when I found this sports rehab specialist who kind of looked at the body as a whole that she discovered that, you know, my hips were kind of twisted that way, and that way because of muscle imbalances, and the knee is just feeling the pain, and so you've got to go to where the kind of root cause of the problem, not necessarily where you feel the pain. But in business, you know, to use that as an analogy, everyone's kind of become a knee surgeon, right? Everyone knows a lot, a very deep reservoir of knowledge about one tiny area or something. And of course, that's not always the root cause of the problem. And you can over-optimize on certain things. You can make interventions in certain areas, and it's going to have no impact on your real-world performance. So I would argue that nowadays, as people are so specialized, it's kind of our general knowledge and our coordination that determines our performance, not how deep our individual skills are. It's the latent impact of what we do on the business as a whole that's really going to determine our success. And that was really what was behind the book. I mean, and as much as anything, you know, what we really need to do is waste less as much as kind of grow more. And we waste so much time and we waste so much money and energy pursuing these initiatives, whether it's entirely new propositions or whether it's, you know, these huge upheavals to the business that aren't going to have any results in the real world. And, you know, life is precious, right? Our time on Earth is finite. We don't want to spend it doing these things that aren't gonna have any impact on.
What would be helpful, I think, Matt, at this point, would be just to very briefly explain the grid. I mean, the grid is a 3x3 grid,
sure,
nine boxes, but just very, very, in very simple outline, would you just paint a little picture about that?
Oh, sure. I mean, so the starting point for it was to say, well, what are the characteristics of a successful business, or what does a successful decision look like? And I kind of boiled it down to three criteria. The first is desirability, because if people don't want what we're selling, that's kind of a fundamental problem. So desirability is the first element. The second is profitability, because clearly if it costs us more to provide than we can generate in revenue, then we ain't going to be around for long, or we'll just keep burning through investors' money with no returns for them. Hey, Bertie. And the third one is longevity. So the longer we're making that profit for, the better, and people tend to be pretty reluctant to deal with a company that could go out of business tomorrow for fairly obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. So you've got three goals, and you would say a great decision is one that makes an informed trade-off between them. A little bit less desirable, but much more profitable might be good. Take that too far and you compromise the longevity, right? A little bit more profit,
nice.
And so on and so forth. So you've got to make trade-offs or informed trade-offs between those three things. What makes that challenging to do in practice is that what it takes to do that is changing, right? So, and we've got change, broadly speaking, along three particular axes that are crucial to every business. So the customer is one. If what they want changes, then obviously that's going to have an effect on everything else. We've got changes to the market conditions. So maybe rivals come and go, maybe our category starts to reach saturation, whatever it might be. Maybe there's some other change in the dynamic there, the balance of power with our suppliers or our customers. So we've got changes to the market. And then the third one is actually changes to our own organization. As we grow, maybe we've got a lot more cash than we did in the early days, but maybe we're less nimble. You buy one system, automatically you're not buying another one, and that's going to kind of form constraints. So to kind of cut to the chase, you've got three goals, desirability, profitability, and longevity. And then you've got these three kind of layers of change, the customer, the market, and your organization. And if you put those together, because any one of those changes can affect any one of your goals, you get these nine interconnected factors that together really determine the success or failure of any business. And what's been interesting in the feedback that's come back from people is that when they see it, they see these nine boxes, they kind of can't unsee them. and they start to think, yes. Oh my God, yeah. Like, how did we miss that? It's so obvious. Or that part of our business is clearly so fundamental, but we know very little about it. And then within those nine boxes, which you've kind of got to keep balanced or in parity, I focus on three things within those. I think three is the magic number. So, for example, the intersection of desirability and the customer is wants and needs, because what they want and need determines what they find desirable. And I break that into three subcategories. So the customer's beliefs and values, which dictate what kind of products or services they're going to find appealing in the first place. You know, you're going to sell meat to a vegan, right? Or you're not going to,
right.
As other brands have found out, if you start to clash with people's beliefs and values, that can be problematic. Then you've got their goals. And then you've also got barriers that they might face to achieving those, which is a classic thing that businesses forget about often with new products is adoption barriers. So you've got 3x3x3, and that's basically how it works. You can print off these free worksheets, but you should read the book as well. And then you can use it to systematically analyze the strengths and weaknesses of any business, or to go through the implications of a strategic decision on all of these different aspects. So, fine, outsourcing might reduce our fixed costs, for example, but what's the effect going to be on our customer experience, on our imitability, on our ability to adapt in the future, on our bargaining power, and so forth. And it's really a way of getting the whole gang together to have much more structured conversations using the grid as a kind of lingua franca, if you like. We've found that, you know, even in our team, in our consultancy, that we naturally refer to it. And of course, then everybody in the discussion knows what we're talking about. And it's kind of magic. It's amazing to think how we would have these discussions without it, in a way. Right. So that's, in a nutshell, what it's all about.
Excellent. I mean, I think in terms of the work we do, you know, that as you know, my own obsession and the obsession of the Mighty Value Genie is all around customer value.
Sure.
And I think the grid is helping us, actually, to raise it. Yes, we remain absolutely focused on customer value and customer value. So in one sense, the left-hand vertical is our territory.
You've started doing it yourself, right? Yeah. But you've got it lodged in your cranium.
It is, because it makes you think, hang on, we need to, we must still think about all the rest of it. And if anything that we are doing in isolation, if the trade-offs are wrong, and it's going to damage, it could potentially damage what's going on elsewhere. And so I, you know, we are finding it directly of value, which is
well, that's great to hear. That's the aim of the game, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and I think I can honestly say we did absolutely everything to try and make it the most pragmatic and reader-centric book that we could, right? I mean, it's not an ego trip. It's there to help people out in the real world. So, you know, when you think about the structure of it, that kind of reveals increasing levels of detail as you go through, so that you can kind of just home in on the things that you're really interested in, or what you maybe get straight to the thing that's going to be of most value. The key questions at the end of the chapters to ask yourself. And even the recommended reading at the end, all of this stuff is about trying to help people, whatever kind of business they're running, whether it's a consultancy like yours or whether it's your clients, to have more structured conversations and make better decisions.
I go along with that absolutely. I think you've done a wonderful job in that respect. I love the questions, the isolated sets of questions. You can do a quick checklist. I also love the fact that you have huge number of case, not long-winded, but really pithy, well-expressed case studies, so everything is real. You must have hundreds of them.
It's over 130 different brands. And not just B2C, which are the easy ones, but there's quite a lot of B2B. We've got everything in there from jet engines to chocolate manufacturers. I think examples are important because it makes it real for people when you see, that's a company that's actually applied this and it's worked for them. Otherwise, it's just kind of academic guff. It's not really going to help you. Not that I don't love a bit of academic guff myself. It definitely takes it off the page and into practice, I think, when people see examples.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I'm a fan, as you probably gathered. I think this is a great piece of work, and I think it actually is of enormous value to anybody really running any kind of business, all the way up. And I can't recommend it highly enough. I think you've done a fantastic job, Matt. So, available from all great sources, as usual, and Amazon. We'll put a link on. Are there any other element? Anything else that you would like to cover?
I could. I'm stuck in limbo between wanting to never stop talking about it and kind of feeling that I've talked about it so much. It was one thing that I would say is that it was a tremendous journey to go on to research and write it. I'm kind of not the same guy I was when I sat down to do it. Not least of all because my hair's fallen out. But I and I think that one of the most challenging things about writing the book was it kind of shined a light on some of the things that I, maybe I'm not so good at, some of the weaknesses that I should address in my own business. Right. So it was kind of quite a profound transformation for me, actually, and it was a huge. I'm very grateful that basically I had this tremendous opportunity. I was paid to learn all these things, and there aren't many people who, can immerse themselves in something for 4 years, basically at the exclusion of anything else, just to say, I'm just going to crack this one case. That's what I love to do, is to crack the case. To spend 4 years just working on one idea and refine it, and to learn so much was a tremendous opportunity. I've read the best part of, it could be 200, it could be 300 books in preparation for the manuscript. When I looked at my little software of notes, I think it was 280,000-odd words of notes that we took in preparing for this, and we did it so that the final result, we kind of worked that hard so that the end result for the reader would be so easy for them to read and enjoy. And I just really hope that the people pick it up and they enjoy it, and more importantly, that it helps them to make better decisions. Because ultimately, I think we've all got professional ambitions. Right? For some people, it's getting a promotion. For others, it's the dream of starting and running their own business. For others, it's to do what they love doing, but maybe just have a little bit more of a buffer in the bank or whatever it might be. And our work life, has a tremendous impact on our well-being in general. When work goes well, it's a huge part of life because we spend so much time doing it. And when work is bad, when it's stressful, when it's hard, it can really impact us. So really the driving force behind this book, it's a business book. Yeah, it's a kind of strategy text. But really, my hope for it is that it actually contributes to people's well-being by helping them towards the things that they personally are going to find fulfilling in their life. So that's really what it's all about. And let's see how it goes over the coming years.
Well, fantastic. I mean, I think that goal should be achieved. I mean, you've already alluded to it, that you've got what you've provided is great accessibility. You know, and we'll put in the lower third. You can see Matt's email address, details of the book.
My personal email address.
Your,
why
my
work
not?
Email address. Why
you
not?
Put it in the book.
I put my work email address in there.
You're on the hook. And also the fact you created, which you've already alluded to, this set of support tools which are available online. So we, you know, it is a very practical kit, actually.
Well, we've tried our best. Yeah, the PowerPoint was a new thing. We had worksheets with the previous book, but, you know, we're listening. So some early users of the grid said, oh, what I really need is some PowerPoint templates so I can communicate what I found to other people in the company. So, you know, that's exactly what we've done. And if there's more feedback about things that we should change or do differently, we'll do that as well. You know, it's a journey. We haven't arrived yet. So we just got to see what happens.
Well, terrific. I think, Matt, it's great. I'm very grateful. You know, we're sitting here able to talk about it. This is great.
Oh, it's perfect timing.
Yeah. I picked up Matt earlier from the, Chartered Institute of Marketing.
Yeah.
Next stop, he's off to back to the States, so it's all getting around. You've been, 8 weeks?
I've been away from home for a long time. It's been interesting and exciting, but I'm looking forward to going back, and I'm damn grateful I've got a place to go back to. You know, I think about some of these people Caribbean or in Florida having a terrible time, so I'm grateful for that. Yeah, life on the road's been fun as ever, but, you know, it was perfect timing. We're halfway between giving my speech this morning and where I've got to get to this afternoon, and we get to have a pub lunch together and relax a little bit. So it's really my pleasure to see you again, Dave. Thank you so much.
Terrific. Thanks, Matt.
My pleasure, man.
Cool. Yeah, it's 20 minutes, so I think we're...